Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Thursday, April 30th, episode 137. Today, we went to the Beijing Auto Show. Tested Xpeng's FSD like autonomy and the Porsche Cayenne debuted, and of course much more. I am your host Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today in a minute will be Kyle Connor from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios. We have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of YouTube's Drive Electric with Dominic, and still on his travels but not in Tenerife, is the host of YouTube State of Charge and, of course, EVChargingStations.com, Mr. Tom Mulogany, joining us from a mystery hotel room a long way from home, but at least in the United States of America. We're going to get into it in a moment.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
All right, here we go. So yeah, if you're watching the show rather than listening, you'll see on screen Kyle's not here yet, but he's joining in just a moment. But we could get Tom really quickly. Tom, last week you were on vacation in Tenerife. This week you're doing a recharge rescue. Where should we start?
Well, why don't we go back to last week?
All right.
Yeah, I was able to go to the Canary Islands, the island of Tenerife. Spent a week there, really nice with my wife, a little R&R, but also spent a lot of time doing kind of like, you know, guerrilla research of the EV scene on the island. Learned a lot. I made a little video short that's up on State of Charge. There were more electric vehicles there than I expected. There were plenty of different brands. I mean, I saw Teslas, a lot of Coopers, which were really cool, BYDs, Opel. I actually rented an Opel Corsa E.
Hey guys,
Audis,
I'm here.
Bunch of EVs. And one of the things that was cool about it was every car rental agency that I went to had electric vehicles as an option. That's not the case here. Like in the States, where I've tried to rent cars when I've gone to different recharge rescues or whatever and gone to different states, and either they don't have them at all or they're like, oh yeah, they're not available right now. So it's much more difficult there. Every agency I went to had EVs in their fleet. And I rented the Opel, really cool. I mean, islands are perfect for electric vehicles, small islands like the Canary Islands. The Tenerife, which is the largest of all the Canary Islands, that's where I went. It's only 55 miles wide by 50 miles long. And so, I mean, you could just drive all day. The only challenging thing is it's a very mountainous region. I mean, the Canary Islands are formed from volcanic eruptions, you know, and there's a lot of elevation change. So that burns your battery, but you gain it on the other side, on the other side of the mountain. Infrastructure-wise, NL seems to be the predominant network there. There seem to be DC fast chargers every 20 or 30 kilometers on the main highways. So the island was relatively well covered, only 50 kilowatt. But most of the cars there are tiny little cars. All the cars are small cars, you know, and so they have small batteries. And while charging faster would be a pleasure, you know, people seem to be making it work. But most of the people that I talked to said that, you know, that they wouldn't have got the car if they couldn't charge at home. And they use the public infrastructure just as a backup. But all the chargers I went to, there were cars using them.
Yeah.
At gas stations, at shopping malls. There were a few in shopping malls. And I actually had to wait when I went to one shopping mall just to get a spot.
Yeah.
And another cool thing about these, the European DC fast chargers with the different type of power, as if you're watching now, you can see they have AC inlets on the DC fast chargers. So you could plug your cable in. I was in a shopping mall here where I didn't want a DC fast charge, but AC charging at 22 kilowatts would have been great, you know, and plugged in. I don't even know if the Opel could accept the full 22, but I only stayed there for a short period. But that's a great option to be able to use your cord and charge AC. So, it was a good trip. Learned a lot about charging in Canary Islands, learned about EV adoption. The hotels, most of the big hotels all had banks of chargers, as you see here, if you're watching on YouTube. I could drive all day around the island, come back, plug in at the hotel, and I left the next morning with a 100% charge. So it actually worked out much better than I thought. When I went there, I told my wife, "Right, if it's a disaster, I'll bring the car back after the first day.
Yeah,
we'll get something else if we can't charge, if it's going to be a nightmare." But it was actually really easy, and I was able to drive all I wanted to during the week. So that was last week. Then I was home for a day, and I see Kyle there. Hey, Kyle. I was home for only a day, and I had to hop on a flight to La Mesa, which is in San Diego County, California. That's where I am now. I'm going to leave in about 20 minutes now to do a recharge rescue. There's a 22-year Navy engineer who's currently serving. He's not a veteran. He's still in the Navy. He has a very complicated home electric setup. He's got solar. He's got battery storage. He's got a lot of stuff at his house. And he has had a problem for a couple of years now. He was on active duty deployment when an electrician came in and upgraded his service, gave him a whole new service, ran all the lines to the car charger and everything. And he's burned out three chargers. And his charging, when his car's charging, it'll just suddenly just shut off. And then it'll start up maybe an hour later. And it's not like it's the charger's issue, because this has happened with three different chargers. We measured the temperature of his panel, his 60 amp breakers getting way too hot. We measured the charger itself, and it's getting way too hot. He actually has fans on his charger to cool it off while he's charging. So there's some kind of wonky issue here that we have to try to figure out today. And I brought in Trout Electric in California, who is one of the biggest firms out here for electric vehicle charging infrastructure. These guys are pros. And Matt Trout, the owner of the company, he's a master electrician, is meeting me here in about a half an hour. And we're going to try to figure this thing out for this guy. He's super busy. He's always on deployments and stuff. He doesn't have time to figure it out. He's had three different electricians come out. They can't figure it out. He had SDG&E, San Diego Power, come. They even installed a new transformer out in front of his house because his voltage was wonky. It was going up and down. They thought that was the problem. Now he has this new transformer with perfect power. It's still happening. So we don't know what's going on, but we're going to spend all day here trying to figure it out and get his charging circuit safe and working.
These recharge rescues are all funded by you, your channel, your website at evchargingstations.com and State of Charge as well. So this is, it's a big investment for you to do. Not a cheap fix. We can't wait to see what your, if you can resolve it, in a day. Yeah. But it's very early in the morning for you on the West Coast thing. But we've got you for 20 minutes, got you for 15 minutes. And I wanted to bring you in just for this because you and Kyle are going to easily be able to fill this 15 minutes with charging talk. Kyle, you've been to China to try out BYD's flash charging Blade Battery 2.0 for yourself. Now, you've already had William from Out of Spec Roaming try it out, but there's something different when you do it yourself. You hang out with your friend Diego Pareschi, who is like the head honcho for putting these flash charges in the ground in Europe. When I watched your video, Carl, the best way it made sense to me was for years I was uploading YouTube videos and audio files with my cable internet, which was fine. And then one day they dug up the street and put fiber to my house, which is 2.5 gigs. And the next day when they connected it and I ran a speed test and it went, whoop, upload, whoop, up, download, like the same. And the next time I uploaded something, it wasn't even, I never think about my internet anymore. It just changed my whole life. Because all the little pain points that were like, oh, I've got to upload a video or back up my iCloud, I better do it overnight, I never even think about it. And that's the best way I can describe for our viewers and listeners. When I watched your video, you were like, oh, so charging's fixed. Anyway, Kyle, tell us about it. How did you charge yourself a BYD?
Well, you know, that's a great analogy right there. It is essentially so fast, you never have to think about charging ever again. And I guess the biggest thing here is it's not just this super expensive Denza Z9 that's getting this technology. Every single battery electric BYD car, think about how many BYDs are built every year. Everything from a little, I always use the example, the Dolphin, all the way up to the Yangwang, you know, that can go around the Nürburgring or float in water. Everything will use this exact cell across the entire range. It'll just be arranged in different modules. So fast charging is no longer a premium option. So imagine a new Chevy Bolt, instead of charging from 10 to 80 in 26 minutes or whatever it does, 28 minutes. Imagine it doing that in six. And that's how every BYD, no matter the price point, will charge. Crazy. So it's something that it's like, okay, some of these claims are pretty crazy that BYD had. Obviously, it's very fast charging. The rollout claims of the flash chargers themselves seem like massive claims. And so I wanted to like figure out, okay, first of all, does this thing work? If it does work, how are they going to put them everywhere? Because grid connections are rough. And we learned a lot about the battery integrated storage, which means you need a far less extreme grid connection. Also, if cars charge so much faster, you need far fewer dispensers. You don't need 100 stall charging parks at this point. You could put in four and it could serve the same as, you know, a much larger station charging cars that take an hour to charge. Now, these flash chargers will be open to the public, so they still will get clogged up because at least the mix of vehicles that can charge that fast, at least at initial launch, will be very low. But it's really cool what BYD is trying to do here. It sounds like their CEO was just like, make charging not a problem, make it faster than gas. We don't ever want to talk about this again. Go fix it. Unlimited budget, full send. And that's what they're doing. They built 2,500 stations on powered in the ground in China between January 1st and now end of April. Another 2,500 are installed, ready to get turned on. So that's 5,000 dispensers with two ports each ready to be turned on in China. Crazy. And in Europe, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to dot them everywhere. And that guy on the screen is responsible for it. Diego, he's awesome. Huge head honcho at ABB before he joined BYD. Really, really solid guy.
All right. You plugged in a car which was crashed. So even potentially like not optimal, but it was a front end crash. So you met him at a BYD location where they had a crash car and he was like, yeah, plug it in. It was 30% in no way preconditioned. It had been sitting at ambient like forever.
No, Diego got there about 5 minutes before us. He's like, I'm trying to find a car. He's like, there's a crashed one in the back. I'm like, that'll work. And so that's what we used. You know, I called BYD on my way over to China, and I'm like, or messaged them. And I'm like, yeah, guys, we really need to, like, I don't want to go to one of your labs where you have, you know, your stuff all sorted and the car's prepped. Like, I just give me a car. I want to take it to a flash charger. They're like, sorry, it's the auto show. It's not possible. And I'm like, well, everything's possible. So screw you. So then, you know, Diego basically and I came up with a plan about 3 hours before we filmed this video. I'm like, I will not leave China until we take a car to a flash charger. And, you know, we went to the Denza dealer. I'm like, surely they've got test drive cars. He found this crashed car sitting in the back and it worked out perfectly. The car was dead asleep, zero preconditioning. You know, it wasn't a time test or anything. William did a great charging curve blast on his video. We were not far off of that with this car. I didn't even check, but I think we matched it almost perfectly. And it really just showed, okay, yeah, they've got some big claims, but it works in the real world. And you couldn't get more real than this. The car, like, no automaker would ever let a crashed car go on our cameras, you know, that they would provide to us. And this thing, you know, the bumpers off of it, it's completely disgusting. It's never been washed. It's just so funny. It was real. It was raw. I mean, that's what I wanted to show the viewers was, like, I don't want one of these Chinese automaker, you know, we're going to share our message with you. I'm like, no, let me go do it on our own way. And we did.
And that's why it's so much more powerful than seeing, you know, a bunch of officials in lab coats or even just engineers loitering behind the camera, making sure everything's optimal, you know, checking, you know, the internals. Anyway, Tom, what do we need to ask Kyle while we've got you here? What do we need to ask him about how China charging tech is different to what the rest of us have?
Well, one of the questions I have, and Kyle was talking about it before, that it's going to be open for the public, the BYD network, and anyone can use even slow charging EVs. And the fact that they're not installing a lot of plugs at each station, you know how, like, Tesla owners get upset when they pull into a supercharger site and there's, you know, four Chevy Bolts, let's say, you know, taking up eight stalls and now they can't plug in. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I'm getting to. I wonder if, did they have any, did they give any indication that, like, they might charge more or time-based for the cars that take longer to charge? Because, you know, some people have made a comment I've seen that cars that take longer to charge should pay by time more than kilowatt hour. If they're tying up a stall for 45 minutes and there's four cars waiting that can charge in 7 minutes, shouldn't they have some sort of penalty for that? Was there any talk about that?
Didn't get into that. No, because currently the whole network is locked to BYD vehicles at the moment in China. Everything in Europe will be open. So I'm sure they can, I mean, they can do anything like that. Yes, it's fully integrated. Yeah. But they're also going to put in, like, 400 kilowatt chargers and maybe even 50 kilowatt chargers at sites next to this. So as long as you have reasonably educated drivers, which, let's agree, most are not, you know, you can, you know, you could push them to the slower charging park or piles, you know, left or right of the flash charger. Could be interesting to see how that rolls out. My main concern is really that exact problem, Tom, where the flash charging vehicles are going to have to wait for the flash chargers to open up. But if that's the worst of our problems, that's solvable. That's solvable with pricing incentives. That's solvable with more dispensers. It's solvable with, you know, potentially locking the flash chargers to flash vehicles. That's what really matters is the technology, right? And then you can figure out how to implement it in each market.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of people, a lot of the naysayers are going to say, this is going to burn the batteries up. You know, fast charging is bad. You know, you charge slow, you know, plug into 120 volt outlet, your battery will last forever. now, I know we don't have extensive long-term data, you know, on this type of level of charging. We seem to be getting good results from the other vehicles that are charging, you know, the vehicles we've had for the last few years. DC fast charging doesn't seem to be too harmful to your batteries as long as the heat's managed. But doesn't BYD have a really robust warranty for their batteries? So you don't worry about it. Isn't there, like, you know, they have, like, lifetime warranties for a certain amount of capacity or something like that? Maybe you could talk about that.
It depends on the market. I think in China, at least, you get a lifetime warranty on the battery. I think in other markets, you get like an 8-year huge mileage, you know, whatever is industry standard or above. So there's a couple ways to think about this. Some new startup Chinese brands will give like crazy warranties. But the question is, will they be around? Will they survive long enough to honor that warranty? That's a real concern of a lot of Chinese buyers, especially with brands that are starting up and failing left and right. That's what we've gone through. BYD, I'm not too concerned about that. That's a real established automaker. Yeah. They do everything else. So at least I think they'll be around to honor their warranty. Now, will there be hiccups and bugs and blah, blah, blah? Yes, I'm sure. And are there exclusions to warranties? Yes, of course, every company would do that. But my concern with the cell longevity isn't actually so much to do with the fast charging. I think from like you said, Tom, most of what we've seen, huge DC charging vehicles, Ioniq, for example, that was the big, everyone cried wolf when Taycan and Ioniq were, oh, it charges at 250, 270 kilowatts all the way up. You're going to fry the cell. That has just not played out into reality. In fact, some of the worst degradation performance comes from some of the slower charging vehicles. Mm-hmm. For example, my Tesla Model S has lost 13% capacity in only 50,000 miles with a fair amount of DC charging. Yes, but that's worse performance than Hyundai Ioniq 5 that had, you know, 300,000 kilometers on it in taxi use. So it really depends on many factors. It also depends on how the automaker hides buffers. Tesla is pretty transparent about their state of health. Many brands, Ford, for example, will eat up buffers and still show very high state of health to the user. And then it'll trail off after a couple of years once you eat up that sort of buffer space. So there is no industry standard on measuring state of health to actually make a fair comparison. All we can say is we know for sure that, for example, Tesla's cells, the ones they use, whether mostly the Panasonic cells that go in S and X and now 3 and Y, have very poor capacity retention after many cycles. I mean, it's got to be close to bottom of the barrel. As much as I praise those cars every single day, I think the Model Y is the best, probably the best single vehicle on sale in our market. You will have capacity fade, even if you do everything you can to take care of the battery. Some of these crazy fast charging cars just aren't showing that data, at least not initially. So I would say if you're really concerned about it, lease the car, do whatever you can to fry the battery, and then give it back.
Exactly. Well, listen, guys, I have to cut out. I have to go try to figure out David's problem, and I'll report back on it next week. Thanks for letting me join for the first few minutes. And one last thing, since we're talking about BYD, I've been following them for years. I think they're going to be a top three automaker in the world in the next 3 to 5 years, you know, volume wise, worldwide. You know, maybe you guys would share your thoughts about that when I take off. But listen, have a good rest of the show. I got to fix David's problems.
All right. Take care. Have a good one.
Good to see Bye. You.
See you, Tom. All right. Bye. So, Kyle, look, where's the magic in this? Because BYD do it all themselves. One of the most vertically integrated companies out there, right? They'll make everything for the vehicle, the batteries, the supply chain. It's beyond what I can explain here. So where's the magic here? Is it the charger? Is it the cable? Is it the fact that they use GBT? Is there something magic there? Is it the cells? Is it the battery backup? What's the magic?
So the real magic isn't the charger, because we've seen semi-truck chargers that are megawatt level. The nice thing about the charger is it's going to be like a pretty reasonable install because of the battery integration with the BYD cells in there. So some of the magic is you can put far less battery buffer. Let's just say there's 400 kilowatt hours for every dispenser because the BYD cells can output at like 10C. You can run two cars flat out on a relatively small battery backup system. Most off-the-shelf battery integrated chargers, the batteries are only 0.5C or 1C. So I think about my X-Charge unit, for example. It's got that big 230 kilowatt-hour battery pack. That's a 200 kilowatt charger. If it was, you know, close to this level, that 200 kilowatt hour battery pack could do like 2 megawatts if, you know, with a big discharge. By the way, that my battery uses BYD cells in that X-Charge unit, which is kind of interesting. Old, not blade cells, but old LFP BYD cells. So the magic isn't there. The cable is a little magical. It's actually the first time we've seen, no, I guess Tesla's done this too, but BYD developed that entire cable, and it's thinner than a version 4 supercharger, and it dispenses 1500 amps peak. And it's technically rated at 1000 amps and can boost to 1500, but it's like a cable that's like that thick.
Yeah.
It's just insane. And I talked to Diego. I'm like, okay, so if you're in boost mode, you get like 5 minutes of boost, which is pretty standard for cables in boost. They're like, hottest day of the year. We ripped on this thing car after car, never derated. I'm like, oh, that's great. So it has nothing to do, really, the magic here. The charger's nice. That's what they're going to install. The real magic is the cell and the fact that it's going to be in so many vehicles. This is not the fastest charging car anymore, by the way. There's Geely stuff that charges faster. CATL, I just filmed a video, it'll go up maybe tomorrow, of a 10 to 80% charge in 3 minutes and 44 seconds.
3 minutes, so is that the new Shenxing third gen?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, third gen. So that is, but the point is CATL don't make cars. They got plenty of partnerships. And Huawei unveiled at Auto China their 1500 kilowatts, and some tech that will deliver 2,400 amps for commercial stuff, but Huawei don't make cars. BYD have Denza and Yangwang and Fangcheng Bao and their Dynasty series and their Ocean series. So the Tangs, the Songs, the Yuans, the Seagulls, Dolphins, Seals, Sea Lions. And some of these cars are like $8,000. So that's, and they do it all. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the magic, is it's not just a supplier that's making a really cool thing that automakers could then integrate into their vehicle. I mean, Huawei has their like sort of Stilatos and Itos that are pretty much under their umbrella, but BYD makes everything, like Martin said. That's the thing. This will go into every segment of every type of electric car, which means every other car on sale now has to directly compete against this charging time globally, because BYD sold globally now except for the US, and which is crazy. We're like on a North Korean island over here. We're getting nothing, which is just insane. But that's another topic for another day. The that's the magic, is it goes into everything. So now we're excited about a Porsche Cayenne. By the way, one's about to get on a plane and get shipped here, so we'll have it very soon.
Good.
We're supposed to be excited about this $200,000 SUV charging at 400 kilowatts. Like, that just seems like lame. Like, don't even bring it here. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Dom, anyway, sorry, Dom, for dominating the conversation. What did you have on your mind?
No, I mean, for a lot of people, the Cayenne charging at 400 kilowatts is fine, because they're not going to be doing like huge road trips in Cayennes, basically, right? Because if you're going to own afford a $200,000 Cayenne, you're going to fly any amount of distance, and you're going to have, you know, great charging set up at home. And it's besides the charging part, I think the Cayenne is, you know, pretty sweet car.
It's going to drive great. I've already driven it. It's awesome. I can't wait to run it through testing. But to your point, Dominic, the cheap cars actually need better fast charging than the expensive cars, because the expensive cars, people will have home charging. Yeah. If you drive a Dolphin for $8,000 or a Wuling mini EV, you know, whatever, in China, you don't have home charging. You have to go to a charging park.
Hey, so one thing I wanted to ask you about this, though, Kyle, I think I saw this on a comment about on the video, which is great. People need to check out that video with you and Diego. It's like there's a ton of details that he goes into that I don't think any other channel has really kind of, you know, got. If you're like really into the geeky details of where is the cooling part of the system, just everything. So someone left a message talking about the high voltage, low voltage, you know, 800 volt architecture, 400 volt architectures. In a system like this, you were saying that it doesn't matter. Can you explain why the voltage of your car's architecture is less important in this flash charging system?
Well, I would say it's less important in any system. We, you know, the rhetoric has been 800 volt charges faster. which actually is completely a false statement. You could wire, like, look at Cybertruck. That's an 800 volt vehicle, charges terribly. And by the way, it charges the same in 400 or 800 volt mode. It's the exact same, because the only thing that limits your charging performance, at, you know, other than like bus bars, cabling, charging equipment, there's many other things, but it really comes down to the cell. What can the cell take? And the cell is 2.7 to 4.2 volts in NMC chemistry. If it's LFP, it's a little bit down. And so the cell never sees on its own anything different than that. So it doesn't matter the rest of the system. It just determines what is your cell's performance. What is the heat management situation? You know, is it a high power dense cell? Is it an energy dense cell? Does it have certain chemistry? There's a lot of new technology with different electrolytes to help transfer the lithium over without plating or dendrites forming. You know, what's inside of that cell ultimately determines the curve of the vehicle. The power or the overall performance of peak charging, thermal management, that's when you design the system. And a lot of big batteries do need high voltage in order to get high system charge power when you want to push above 250 kilowatts charging, let's say 300, 400 kilowatt charging. You generally have to go higher voltage because most charging equipment installed in the ground, or almost all charging equipment installed in the ground, is limited to 500 or 600 amps. And so in order to get more power, well, you got to up the voltage because you have that current limitation. We're going to start to see more high current and high voltage chargers as charging power increases. But, you know, like what Tesla did with Cybertruck, when you plug Cybertruck into a version 4 dispenser at a V3 plus supercharger, which are the V4 dispenser V3 cabinets, what 99% of the new superchargers look like, except for the handful of actual V4s, it's dumping 900 plus amps into the Cybertruck. It's just like, here's all the current. And that's what heats up the system. So you're limited by connection points, bus bars, current collectors. I mean, there's a lot of things that can get hot when you're pushing that much current. But at the cell level, it doesn't care. It makes no difference if you're at 400 volt or 800 volt. So what Dominic's referencing here is some of the BYD Dolphin, let's say the small stuff, doesn't have to be 800 volt to charge really fast here. If your capacity is lessened, you could still charge like a 10 kilowatt hour battery pack, let's just say, for example, at 100 kilowatts, 10C charging, let's just say, okay, which is not far off what this is doing here. So let's say you have a 10 kilowatt hour battery pack, you're putting in 100 kilowatts, it's still going to take 5 minutes to get to 80%. Same thing. And so, but you don't need 800 volts to get there. You could do that at, you know, 300 volts if you know, just depends on how much series count you have wired from the cells. So the voltage does not matter. Voltage helps by reducing heat loss from the transmission to the actual battery pack. Like, that transition period reduces heat in the cable, heat in the connection, heat in the bus bars, heat through the power conversion system, heat through everything that it has to flow through. It reduces that, and it reduces losses. It's good to have high voltage. But once you get to the cell level, makes zero difference.
This is exactly where I hope the conversation would go as well, because I can inevitably predict that there will be some people on your videos and ours as well that say, this is all nice, but we can't get it, because they're, you know, US viewers, or even some European viewers, although less so because we get a lot of Chinese stuff now. But a lot of US viewers saying, that's all nice, we can't get it. Why are you talking about this? And I said last week on the podcast, it's because somebody invented it. And whether you can buy it now or not, you will be able to buy it one day. Now, I can't talk to you about American politics. I love it. But I can't talk to you about, will BYD be this time next year or in 10 years time? I don't know. But I know you'll be able to get it one day in America. And Canadians are going to get it very soon. And it's in Mexico. So it can't be that far away. So we're talking about it because it's been invented. And this is exactly as Carl says, it just kind of doesn't matter. Like, all the stuff that we've been doing now in the West to game the system, to get this fast charging, this technology has been invented. It's no longer alien stuff. When you did it, when you charged, which was, I think, 7 minutes something, it was 3280. What was your peak speed that you hit? Because we talk about 1500 kilowatts, and I've shared some Chinese social media on EV News Daily and run it through AI, and I think the translation was somebody going, well, I'm only at 900 kilowatts. Like, I'll still take it. What speeds did you get on that car?
We don't know because it doesn't show kilowatts, which because pisses me off.
The whole thing, the display is literally you plug the car in and it just tells you how many minutes till 97%. Like, they don't want to share nerd level stuff. They want what they're trying to change the conversation to is you plug it in and it charges.
Well, and that's back to your home internet conversation. Once you reach a certain point, like I'd look at it this way. When I'm on Starlink and I'm trying to upload a video, right? I'm agonizing over, oh my gosh, I'm only getting 14 megabits per second, but I really should be getting 20. You know, like that could really measurably impact the upload performance of a video. But if I'm getting a gigabit upload and then like maybe I get 1.2 and that's a massive difference. I don't really care. Video gets up in no time. So that's their viewpoint on charging. Now, you'll see it in the video. What I told the guy who's responsible for this charging, I said, that's stupid. Let's see the big numbers.
Well. You're like, he'd given you the most amazing access to like, and the video's got like 150,000 views in the first couple of days. Like, you genuinely were like, where's the nerd level stuff? Like, this is all mumbo jumbo. You weren't rude. Go and watch the video. You weren't disrespectful. But you did say, like, where's the rest of the stuff I want to know?
Yeah, I'm like, do I have to carry a OBD port with me to show the viewers this? Like, people just want to see the stuff. I'm like, especially as it's new and only the nerds are into it to start before, like, grandma tells her friend, hey, I charged in no time. You should get one of these BYD cars too, which in China is how a lot of purchases happen, by the way. A lot of that word of mouth reputation goes a long way with Chinese people versus here in the US. If I tell someone, hey, you should really buy the new Mercedes EQS because 800 volt and steer by wire, the instant reaction of someone is, here's all the reasons in my head that I can think of not to buy that car. It's the exact opposite kind of way. So Diego said they're going to make a nerd menu and they're going to show all that. So that will come.
Yeah.
Because the experience is great to explain for a grandmother, word of mouth kind of thing. But for guys love numbers. It doesn't matter. You know, just it's like sports is all about numbers. Cars, it's really numbers, man. And so, you know, imagine 1,500,000 watt light bulbs. 15,000. Yeah. A ton, 150,000 watt light bulbs. And that's what you have, like, all pour it into your car at once if you have the right car.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to the reason they're not sharing the kilowatts is because it's fairly easy for other automakers to upstage their peak charging power, because BYD would need, you know, like you need a big battery with this cell still to get over 1 megawatt level charging. If you charge a Dolphin, it's not, it might only do 200 kilowatts peak. Like, that's a small battery, right? But still, the time to get to your end charging point to 97% or 70% or whatever you're trying to get to will be identical across the whole model range. So what a lot of their competition could do to say they're ahead of BYD, this is just my thinking on their branding, is you could say, hey, we've got 150 kilowatt hour battery pack. Let's dial this thing up to do 1500 kilowatts. You know, that's only 10C. We've got the tech. Now we're faster than BYD peak charging power. When in reality, it actually, you know, is either comparable or worse on the overall curve. So the good thing about the time is it makes the battery capacity irrelevant. It means that no matter what, your fill-ups will take this amount of time, which is kind of how gas is. Because you get a small tank, big tank, like I don't really measure. I just know it takes me a few minutes to get gas, right? I took my Mini Cooper to fill up yesterday to drive home. And I took it to the gas station. I hadn't driven it in a while. I pulled out. I got in, put the card in the machine, waited for it to process, pumped the fuel, got back in the car. And I was like, I don't know how long that took, but it was pretty quick. That's good. Same thing. I take my Range Rover to the gas station. 3 times bigger tank. I put in the card, I fill it up, I do whatever, check my messages, go, oh, that was fine, okay, and I'm back on the road. So that's the experience that BYD is trying to give to their consumers, is we're at the point where kilowatts doesn't matter, time doesn't matter, or I should say time is the only thing that matters. It's just takes a few minutes to fill up. No matter the car, you're back on the road. Also to the viewers who think we shouldn't be talking about this because it's not available in the US, just look at the views on the video.
Yep.
People care. It's the biggest video I've posted all year on out-of-spec reviews.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, the first couple of days, it just flew.
Yeah. We're incentivized to show cool tech.
Like you said, it just changes everything, because now, I mean, I'm wondering how much it changes everything. Like, so BYD makes famously, you know, plug-in hybrid vehicles. Does this make all those vehicles kind of irrelevant going forward? Do they really need? I mean, they have so many vehicles. Oh my God, they have the BYD Seal, right? But they have the BYD Seal, they have BYD Seal 5, BYD Seal 6, BYD Seal 7. I think they just debuted 8. And then you have the same kind of series with some of the other things. The Sea Lion's got a 7 and an 8 now. There's just a raft of it's just like a juggernaut of a company. Like, to Tom's point earlier, it could, especially with this system, if this system really gets a lot of buy-in from people, it could easily become one of the biggest companies, automakers in the world in the next 5 years.
Absolutely.
But will they have plug-in hybrids? I don't know. What do you think?
Yes, of course they will. Right now, all powertrain sources, because they're a large amount of BYDs are sold outside of like developed markets. They're going to the developing world. It's going to South America. They're going to Africa. They're going to India, places that don't yet have infrastructure for EVs. They're still selling all of their range extended EVs, which, by the way, an EREVs stole the show at Beijing. 80%+, 90% of cars are either offered in EREV or EREV only. And for those who don't know, EREV is extended range EV. Think of BMW i3 with the range extender. You have a little engine that's only job is to charge the battery. So you always get an EV-like driving experience. All of them can be AC and DC charged. They're essentially full battery electric vehicles. You can take 50% of the battery, 40% of the battery, and just chop it off, because you're trying to make your daily driving fully electric. And then you have a little gas engine for the trips, or you can DC charge if you want to. I think it's the perfect technology for the US right now. You know, I think certainly there's folks like us and many of our viewers that are totally comfortable with the idea of driving a battery electric vehicle every day. It's still my preferred choice for road tripping, is a battery electric vehicle. But so many people are buying Suburbans, Expeditions, Tahoe, you know, whatever, that could just have like a reasonable 50, 60 kilowatt hour battery pack to do the school run, and then just have an engine charge the battery for the long trips. Ultimately, if people just care about range and charging possibilities or filling possibilities, you have it. We do not have a single range extended EV on sale in our market. Not one. You can't buy a single car. And yet, China is 80, 90%.
So the big one is Leapmotor's D19, which is an 80.3 kilowatt hour CATL battery. So that's an 80 kilowatt hour pack on an EREV. So you are always going to be driving on battery power, unless you're doing some crazy mileage. And they've always got a 1.5 litre turbo engine. And why have they've all got that, apart from some big SUVs, some off-roader stuff that maybe got 2 liter engines, because that's the power that you need in terms of kilowatts of power to pretty much generate electricity to put back into the battery to have a usable driving experience. So that's why they've all got 1.5 liter turbo engines, often from Geely as well. But that Leapmotor D19 SUV, I think it's a 3-row, but an 80 kilowatt hour pack, that would sell so well in the US. You do all your miles on electric, and occasionally the engine would kick in and recharge the battery. It's crazy. We're going to take a break because we're going to hear from Tom again. But then we'll be back in the second half of the podcast.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark evchargingstations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. Yeah, we want to hear all about Auto China. Carl took himself over there on his own ticket. He wasn't there to be shown around, certain bits of certain manufacturers. And so we're going to get a really unfiltered view. Two things happened this week that made me think this point in time is when we will look back on. So BYD flash charging in the real world, totally raw, just changed everything. Plus CATL, fast charging. And Sun Woda announced their 1,500 kilowatt charging tech and their battery rather, and Huawei as well. Also, Xiaomi announcing their European entry and opening their German center and bringing in a bunch of people that have worked on legacy. That sounds like I'm being mean. I hate that word. Established car brand. So it's led by Rudolf Dietrich, leading the Munich Center in Germany. He worked on BMW's M4 GT3 race car. You got Klaus-Dieter Grohl working on vehicle dynamics. He comes from BMW 3 Series, 4 Series, Z4s, X5s. Fabian Schmolz Obermeier, who worked on the Porsche 992 GT3 RS and the Lamborghini Temerario. Dusan Saraç joining for the vehicle work, coming from Rolls-Royce Cullinan. Like, listen to all the names of this. They've pulled together a German team for Xiaomi who have let Western reviewers have a look at their cars. Marcus Brownlee's had it on his channel. And it's always, yeah, but there's that last 1% that's obviously it's Chinese. Now they're taking the Western markets really seriously for a few reasons. Like, competition at home is intense. You can make more money going abroad and overseas. Carl, you took yourself there on your own dime to have a look at Auto China. So What was it like?
Yeah, I mean, it's like so hard to explain, and it's something everyone should go to. Like, you know, I spend a lot of time in Germany, right? Or at least have spent a lot of time in Germany, because that's where all of my favorite cars have been developed. So I wanted to go rip on the Autobahn, go to the Nürburgring, go see the cars, go meet the engineers, and really, you know, understand how some of the best cars in history were made. And a lot of that is just spending time where those cars are developed. It's all in China now. Germany is just seems like they're not stalled out. They're doing cool stuff. But if you're not paying attention in China, then you are totally missing the boat. It is crazy. And to the, you know, all the way top down, these are CEOs that are treated like superstars. By the way, me and Drew are in that car, which is really funny. So Drew's in the driver's seat, and I'm in the back seat of the car where everyone's surrounding us. That was us.
No way! That is absolutely crazy. Look at that. Yeah, just mute that. Thanks, Tom. That's crazy. And look at that. Just thousands of people surrounding you.
Yeah, Drew was trying to close the trunk on them, which would have been, or the front trunk, which would have been really funny.
So what happened? Like, William Lee, the CEO of NIO, just happened to come up to the show, and that's what happened. Was that?
Yeah, exactly. Even when I chatted with William Lee, I mean, we had a chance with, you know, just we had 15 minutes with him or whatever, just to chat. Like, they had to like have security like block people off. Yep. It was insane. Same with Mr. He Xiaoping, you know, like the XPeng CEO, same thing, treated like a celebrity. It's wild. Drew and I think it's hilarious. Like, we're like, dude, y'all got to find something else in life than to fanboy over these people. But you know, they're like crawling over each other. It's like a stampede. It's really an insane thing. It's literally that they're like, people are getting squished.
Yeah,
I feel like there's like a lot of national pride wrapped up into what China's auto industry has done, you know, and these guys are like really kind of leading in many ways, you know, even more so than like traditional or Chinese automakers like the Xiaopongs and the Nios and the BYDs. Yeah. These guys are, you know.
Well, yeah. We had a lot of experience with this from previous shows, previous, meetups with them, different events. That's very common. Actually, a lot of them are like brand owners who are super fans, you know, so think of like Tesla owners and Elon, but like dial it up to 11. So it gets pretty crazy. But that's one side of it. The rest of China is, it is just focused on building cars with really cool features that customers seem to love. They're building stuff with actual usable features. They're communicating those features in a really cool way. We all saw the Li L9 SUV suspension where they beached it in sand, picked up each tire, put the Max Trax under it. These are really cool displays, cool, useful features where, you know, we're just trying to get cars with pet mode here in the US.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So
cool features.
And so, yeah, I feel like a few years ago when I was reporting on China, I'd maybe say, oh, it's got the fridge or the fridge that can also heat. And that was a novelty. Then maybe a couple of years ago, it had the fold down screen. And now they've all got the second row fold down screen, like a giant BMW i7 screen. And like the average family car's got that now for the kids in the back. And then I'd say, oh, well, the new Desus or Desus suspension, like the air suspension is on the top level one. And now average family cars have got this, and we were seeing some pictures of suspension in action. That it seems like all these features that are kind of novel, once they work out that they're popular with Chinese buyers, then they've got the ability to populate their range really quickly. Also, cycle life is really quick in China as well, for good and for bad. And it sucks because they don't really announce cars coming up. So you can go and buy the latest, greatest tech today in a showroom, and they'll literally just release the new model tomorrow, and it'll be cheaper and better in every way. And they don't Neo sometimes don't announce that's coming. But Neo have said, look, if you want us to survive, this is cutthroat. We have to do it. We have to work at this speed. And it kind of sucks if you've... Well, they try and make it right with people. But this tech kind of filters down into the average family car. LiDAR's another one. LiDAR was fabulously expensive only a few years ago. And now the technology has got to a point where it's just in the average car. And but it's not the defining technology, because a lot of the self-driving is done with cameras. And the LiDAR is the belt and braces. But it's good to have it. And buyers want it. What you've mentioned, EREV, Kyle, was there an overarching technology or an overarching feeling from Auto China this year?
Yeah, first of all, I think we're in a bubble, and maybe at the peak of the bubble. It's just it could go one way or the other, but it feels like it's too everyone's doing the same thing. There's no differentiation in China. So if you take a Leapmotor SUV, like you mentioned, or Aito or Stellato or Li, or the list goes on, probably 12 or 15 luxury SUVs. They all kind of look the same. They all do the exact same thing. They all offer the exact same features. They're all awesome and like in their own way and have little things here or there, but there's almost too much choice to the point where a lot of the brands that aren't selling well in China are going to do the whole let's export and take on a market. So like Jator is just going hardcore after the Middle East. Like I was in Dubai and everyone's got Jators now, but you don't see those in Europe. So like certain brands will pioneer certain regional areas with their vehicles. And so I think that's maybe a path forward for some of these. But if you're in China, you're going to see, I think the bubble might burst. Where it really might be like, okay, just the top three players in the luxury segment, for example, might just survive. Because, you know, like for example, there's been S-Class, A8, and 7 Series. Three, right? And A8 just got canceled. So now you're down to S-Class and 7 Series. Those are three highly competitive cars that have just battled it out for the last 20 years in the market, maybe 30 years. Mm. In China, you've got like 12 or 15 different S-Class competitors, or 15 or 20 GLS competitors. There's no way they can all survive. There's no way. I mean, I can't see it unless they just keep doing this whole like price to the bottom thing. So I think we're seeing this insane, amazing value for money in China, but a lot of it is just brands trying to get market share, trying to survive, hold on one longer day than the next brand so they go out of business. And then they can, we've got some breathing room in the segment. That's my feeling. I think we're kind of at the bubble.
Did you notice the 9 series? So I've read some reports where the so generally in China, the numbers signify bigger. So things like Neo ES9 is a big three-row full-size BEV.
The Leo, by the way, that Neo ES9 might be the best engineered car I've ever sat in.
It's special, right?
It's wild.
XPeng G9, X9 rather, the BYD Tang 9, the Denza D9, Li Auto, Zika 009. So that, did you notice that they, that China's gone really big? Like there's a big three-row, large SUV, MPV kind of influx in the last 12 months.
Oh yeah, everything's a 9. Everyone's got a 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
And they all are perfectly segmented to compete with each other. And all the 9s are awesome. And, you know, they're all wild. I sat in one of these Denza Z9 thing, or whatever the heck this thing is.
Yeah.
And it was super cool. I mean, it's got all the, you know, pencil stuff where it can pull it parallel park itself and et cetera. They're all cool.
Yeah.
The one I just pulled up on the screen actually isn't a 9, but it just is like that. It's that size. It's the it's part of the Dynasty series. It's a BYD, so it's Da Tang. So BYD has the Tang Dynasty, but this is Da Tang. Da means big. If you look at this, you can see that little symbol there means big. And anyway,
XPeng has their, they call it the GX. We have the Zeekr 9X, but you know, there are different, but that segment of vehicle is very popular, yes, and that's where most of the like real nice stuff ends up. And you know, the question is, how many is too many competitors?
Yeah, and they can't all survive. That's why they're looking overseas, and they need to build overseas as well.
I think people were expecting consolidation in the Chinese market. You know, a really winnowing down of the brands by now, but it just seems like they're still growing. But there's a wall. I know there's a wall. They're going to hit, and I feel there's going to be like a lot of fallout of small brands.
It feels that way, but the Chinese market has surprised everyone. They might have enough, you know, especially if they sell globally, every brand might be able to carve out a little area for itself.
So look, here's the thing. You've just literally lived through that and seen all of that. And then we've had the news this week that Porsche divested from Rimac, Bugatti, pulling back from EVs and made some money. Ford finally made some money. I mean, there were some tariff refunds there, but a big EV pullback. GM, big EV pullback. They deny it, but still, huge pullback from the big names, and we're relying on the Rivians and Teslas and Lucids to drive for the pure EV plays. So you experience all this in China. Then you also experience the Tesla Model Y L, which is, you know, with the Model X out the picture now, a very important vehicle, perhaps for the United States. What's it like when you then come away from China and get back either in the YL or when you finally get home and get in your own car? Like, what's your brain doing to process it?
I think we all call it post-China depression, but I came back and I was just like, you know, it's actually like, I like, because I'm a car enthusiast, I love this celebration America's having right now with ZR1 Xs and Blackwings and Mustang GTDs and sort of these big, you know, performancey V8s are back. I love that personally. I'm here for it. And I actually might pick up a couple cars, you know, over the next couple of years to kind of celebrate that sort of, we're back to combustion, baby. From a business case and from what I want to see our viewers and maybe even what I want to have as a daily driver, I would just love to have at least one or two choices in our market that matches even 80% of what's available in China. The fact that we don't have an EREV on sale. Okay, they're coming. Scout says they're going to bring an EREV. Okay, maybe the Ram will be an EREV. There's a couple models. Maybe Chevy's working on them or GM. But like, they already have all of that. Volkswagen has EREVs in China. GM has EREVs in China. Why are we like Stellantis? Like you just mentioned the Leap. That's their tech.
Yeah. That is their tech. Yeah.
What I don't understand is how is that technology proprietary to a Chinese market? You could build that in the Western world. No problem.
Yeah.
Why don't we at least have those options? So that's what really gets me, is I'm like, we are so disconnected. The consumer base is so disconnected to what's available. Where I just watched a KBB video on the plane back from China where they were reviewing the new RAV4. And they were like, look at all these great features in the new RAV4. This is such an awesome vehicle. I'm like, what world are we living in where this is a nicely integrated, fully engineered package? And this is this gets people excited?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just so disconnected from the realities of cars in China.
So VW has had to turn to the likes of XPeng in China and more joint ventures as well. The ID Era 9X is a vehicle that you drove. And what did you make of the established names trying to compete in China?
Well, Volkswagen Group, if you asked me a year ago, I would have said they're going to die in China.
Written them off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at least they were on their way to just, they're not doing anything. This year was the biggest offensive that I've seen from the Germans taking on the Chinese market. The Volkswagen Group will unveil a new car in China on average every 2 weeks over the next year. Every 2 weeks.
Oh, geez.
Just like boom, 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 new cars. So they're like, okay, we get it. They've spent the last 36 months developing and engineering, which admittedly is longer than a lot of the Chinese guys. But they're like, you know what? We're going to take this on full steam ahead. They're going to do XPeng for their integration of all of their electrical architecture, similar to how they're doing Rivian in the Western world. And they're all in. What scares me is they are relying on so many partners and so many third parties to build their vehicles, which is kind of always, in a way, been the sense of a vehicle manufacturer, is to, you know, become a final assembler and then take parts from a bunch of different other folks. But it feels like even the engineering is being offloaded to the point where I'm like, how can Volkswagen Group, one of the best engineering organizations in the world, how can they not even engineer solutions? And they're having to rely on Chinese brands to engineer for them. So it seems scary from a competence standpoint of what are these brands that stood for great engineering? What are they doing? So I drove that ID Era 9X, which is an SAIC JV with Volkswagen. Doesn't use the XPeng stuff. It's SAIC. But this car, actually, a lot of people are saying, well, it's just an IM LS8 underneath, and it's not Volkswagen at all. That platform was co-developed between Volkswagen and SAIC. Mm. And I spoke to the project manager for it. She actually came with us on the drive. She was awesome. You guys will love her when the video drops. This car is a lot more Volkswagen than people give it credit for in the media. It uses a Volkswagen engine. It uses a lot of Volkswagen stuff. But it is so far ahead of anything Volkswagen sells in the Western world. It feels like it's not even from a different country. It's from another planet or another galaxy. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. They sell this in China, and then they sell us the Atlas. And I'm like, how is this one company?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So 65.2 kilowatt hour pack, the big pack on that. All-wheel drive, e-rev with so much real-world usability in terms of space and capability that anywhere in Europe or the United States, if this was sitting in a VW dealer next time you walked into one, you're like, oh, it's petrol, it's got an engine, but it's mostly an EV and it's got a plug socket on. You'd be like, cool. It would just be a no-brainer of a choice. And it's got the Volkswagen badge on. And it is a VW. And it feels like a VW.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of SAIC stuff in there. There's a lot of Chinese tech, but it works. And it's like, first Volkswagen with the pet mode, dog mode's in there. It's got 500 horsepower. It's got double chamber air suspension. It's got rear steer as standard. It's got a huge screen in the back, heated cooled massage seat, second row. It's got a mosquito catcher built into the car. What the heck? It's got so many things. Yeah. I just cannot believe it's got screens in the wood paneling on the doors. The list goes on and on and on and on. And oh, by the way, the main reason I wanted to drive this car was because, of course, we were one of the first ones to get to drive it, which is cool. We drove it on launch day, and we had it for a couple hours. The Volkswagen was super kind to bring it over. They were like, they never explicitly said this, but they were like kind of not annoyed, but they were shocked that I liked it so much. And also Drew and Vanessa and other friends of mine that were with me, they were like, wow, we're kind of surprised you guys like it so much. We're kind of like I got the sense they didn't want us to say that, because yeah. now they're going to have to bring it to the Western world. And they're like, we're looking into it, maybe. And I'm like, stop everything you're doing and just sell this. It's so awesome. So awesome. So the main reason I wanted to get this was because it had Momenta's driver assistance.
Right.
Now, Momenta is something that comes up in conversation. We go, okay, the BMW iX3 has lane centering on the highway, hands-free. You can look in the mirror to initiate a lane change. But that's only in the Western world. In China, we use a partner, Momenta. Anyway, when you use the system, make sure you take over at red lights, and it's really only a highway ADAS. That's what every automaker says. Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen, Audi, list goes on. The Germans use, and by the way, we use a local partner in China, Momenta, to do our driver assistance.
Mm.
Would you believe it if I told you Momenta was the best level 2 point-to-point system I've ever experienced in any car?
Really? I thought you liked the Huawei.
Better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or at least comparable.
Yeah. Okay.
There's an English language Chinese. I forget the name of it, and I will put it in the description below to give him full credit. English speaking Chinese YouTube channel. So he has to be obviously a little careful in terms of how he describes Chinese cars, and just in terms of being a Westerner in China. And messaging and things like that. But you can read between the lines. He says the same. Momenta, incredible. Incredible.
It was wild. We put it to full aggressive mode, like Mad Max setting.
Yeah.
It was straight up ripping through traffic. It was like cutting off scooters. It was knifing through stuff. It was wide open throttle in places. I'm like, it's like you light this thing's hair on fire and it's off. Of course, you can back it down and calm it down. But it was... At first, I was like, well, Huawei is better. And then we put this thing in some crazy situations. And we were like, oh, wait a second. This is right up there. I mean, yeah. I was going through crazy intersections with like 4,000 scooters running around us. And it was just like, yep, finding its place, doing it very confidently. Yeah. It was unbelievable. So the fact that the Germans know what their cars can do, right? It's not like they're like Tesla FSD in China is not as good as it is here. This is every bit as good as FSD, you know, at least in my short test drive that I experience every day on FSD 14, which I'm a huge proponent of Tesla FSD. I think it's an amazing system. They can do it vision only. So I'm not, you know, I love all this stuff. The fact that the Germans know and put this in their cars and then for the Western world, just go, we do highway lane centering.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can use a Momenta. Can they license Momenta in Europe?
I think it's coming.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, I don't. Yeah, it's so much of it is now political and geopolitical. And, you know, Europe really wants to try and have its own battery industry, its own ADAS industry, its own. The best they can do is just tariff the life out of Chinese until they build them on European soil with European workers. And the Chinese still say, yeah, sure. So they're building factories in Hungary, and MG just announced Spain for theirs. And so they're like, yeah, we'll just build factories in Europe then. And we'll, if that's what you want, we'll build them there. So they're coming. We'll wait and see what happens with Canada.
I understand the point as like someone who is an American, obviously, I think, obviously love living in America. I think this is a greatest place to live. I've been all around the world. I would still, you know, in any country I've ever lived in, I would only choose to live here so far. I've never found a convincing place that I would want to live somewhere else. I understand the idea to say, okay, we are, you know, the entire automotive landscape is shifting to say, okay, the Germans are no longer the engineers here. It's the Chinese. They're the car market. Munich and Stuttgart, they are not the auto capital of the world anymore. It is certainly not Detroit. It is very much Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, et cetera. Yeah. That's the capital of the automotive world. And I understand the idea of like, whoa, that took us by surprise, because it has for everyone. Let's pause. Don't let them in. And in the meantime, let's work really hard so we can compete. But what's happening is, let's pause, don't let them in. Oh, new ZR1X, 1,064 horsepower V8, baby. That's awesome.
Yeah. And Ford saying, well, we'll just change our massive EV plan, which we told you 5 minutes ago was the future, and different divisions and Model E, and here's a guy we brought in, and then, oh no, he's going now, and then we're bringing it all under combustion, and that's fine. You do you, and you do what you have to do to survive and deliver for shareholders, and I get it, but then you're left thinking, well, this has been part of China's central plan since, I think, 2005, with just complete unwavering, and again, we're not arguing about politics here, about the way China do their thing, but just complete, for 21 years, this is the plan, and we stuck to it, and it's been bumpy, and plenty have gone out of business, and that was the point of what they did. It was like, flood the market, survival of the fittest, and now we're all talking about the ones that have survived. So yeah, it's been brutal. I'm not pretending it hasn't been. But then the Germans and Detroit, And the ones that split it, and Stellantis, are like, oh, we can do a little bit here and a little bit there.
It's like, you know, the protectionism thing, the whole, like, let's block it off. Now, I'm very much like, I like the free market. This seems the opposite of that. Like I said, I understand if you're going to say, whoa, we need 4 years to develop our own cars to compete with this. But the brands are not doing that.
Right.
No one is developing competitive vehicles.
Wasting the time. They have this, like, little bit of time. You know,
yes,
blessing of time. It's like a gift, and they've just put it in the pile of other gifts, and they're on to the next new shiny thing. They forgot, and next thing they know, they're not going to have a portfolio, and
as soon as BYD says, you know what, we're going to invest, you know, $47 billion in Texas and build a huge factory, right? And by the way, fast charging and our Tianjin driver assistance is here, and blah blah blah. It's going to be Tesla. It's going to be Rivian, because they have a brand image that's working really well. And then it's going to be BYD. And like, oh, Ford will be, oh, where's your electric stuff? I mean, they've got this UEV stuff coming, but I don't think it's nearly enough. You're going up against companies that have, like Dominic said, literal brand portfolios deep of products and models, and in every minor segment and half segment available. This should be the time that, like, ring all the alarm bells at the Western automakers and just build cool shit, because it's all coming, and now's the opportunity. And maybe they are, and just not telling anyone. I don't know. But it doesn't feel like it.
Doesn't feel like it from all the things that we know. But there we go. None of us run car companies, but it doesn't feel like it. We should, before we go, finish off by talking about the best that we can do at the moment. Which is the new Cayenne Coupe Electric, which on any other week we probably would have led the podcast with. It's the same 800 volt, 400 kilowatt DC fast charging that we've seen on Cayenne already. 16 minutes to 80%, which feels pedestrian, but it's really
stupid, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like, okay, that's literally the best that we can do for a couple of $100,000. Jason Fenske said it was the Cayenne Electric is the best thing he's ever driven. You've had time in the Cayenne. What did you think? What did you take away before all of this China stuff?
I would agree with Jason. I think it's one of the best cars I've ever driven, for sure. Because that's the one thing the Chinese have not figured out yet. They do not, none of their cars drive even remotely as close to, as well as they need to. And you know, the reason that I don't harp on that as much as maybe I should be is very few of our viewer base, our EV-centric viewer base, actually care about handling dynamics, I've learned. Most people just want a comfy, soft ride to cruise on the highway, which the Chinese have figured out, and they do that really well. It's just the steering feel, suspension, they have not got there. This is an unbelievably amazing driving vehicle. All of the inputs are well-tuned. The car is so balanced. I've had it on track. I've had it on the highway. I've had it in the city. It's an unbelievable car. And we're lucky enough to be the first ones, I think, in the US to test it. It gets here next week, is what I'm told. So I'm really looking forward to running it through range tests, charging tests, doing everything with it. But it's
solid state battery away though from really competing with China, is it not? Like, just drop a solid state battery in that.
But the feature set,
like,
and the price. I mean, this was at the Beijing Auto Show, and like, Porsche, people still aspire to a Porsche there. Like, they have the brand heritage that can deserve, you know, earn them the interest. But I spoke to a few of my friends who live in China when we were at the show too, and they're like, I could buy a a Lee L9, a Denza convertible, and a Golf GTI for a track day for the price of one of those.
Yeah.
Speaking of convertible, BYD, Denza Z. Boom.
I
was looking for the other page.
Yeah, this Batmobile thing.
This is on our thumbnail this week, so I thought we should at least mention it because it's like 1,000 horsepower electric convertible, which I guess it was a Cyberster from MG, but I didn't really never really found that like really convincing. This kind of seems like a really nice package. I don't know. Did you see this at all, Kyle?
No, yeah, it looks great. Seems like if it's got all the Denza tech, it should be good. It'll suffer from a lot of the Chinese stuff, which might be like long duration hard driving. They kind of fall apart because they are kind of heavy and they are not very efficient. And just in general, they haven't figured out all ends of the vehicle stuff. I mean, that's not to say this car doesn't have that, but it's kind of got Maserati vibes. It's kind of got some other stuff going on there. Huge power. The Chinese are not really into convertibles. There's only a handful of convertibles on the market. So I think it's cool that Denza did this. It's the right brand. And Denza's launching in Europe. So this might come to, you know, face the Roadster head on in the European market.
Mm, yeah.
Right. Well, to your point about that, I mean, they're being heavy and stuff. That's kind of partly down to the whole LFP battery thing, which is kind of BYD's, you know, bread and butter. You know, CATL's got solid state that put that in this car, 450 watt hours per kilogram. I believe they're coming up with pretty soon. And this becomes, you know, a weapon, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are certain chemistries that make sense for certain types of cars. LFP doesn't make sense here. But of course, BYD is putting that Gen 2 blade cell and everything.
Yeah.
Right.
And as I came back, as I launched the second half of the podcast with, like, I think the two big things this week were the battery tech and then Xiaomi, but they're all doing something similar, saying let's finish off that final 1%, that let's hire a bunch of German engineers and European engineers that have been doing this for, you know, $250,000 cars for a long time, and let's get that final bit. And that's the bit that didn't make the news this week, that no one's paying attention to. And if you get in a 5-year-old Chinese car here, it looks like Windows 95. If you get in a new one, the speed at which it looks and feels different is crazy.
Back to the Cayenne Coupe really quick. I just have to state for, you know, just purposes of every coupified SUV we ever talk about on this show, this is stupid. Just make it a boxy one. Coupified SUVs are dumb.
But you get like nine more miles or something.
Wow.
I feel like there was a big fad for a couple of years with the BMW and Mercedes doing these coupe things, and everyone started making them, and then they forgot to stop making them, I guess. I don't know. They get, I think, 9 extra miles of WLTP range with this Cayenne Coupe, but that's not really worth losing, I think, the storage space and potentially your second row headroom.
And styling, it looks so much worse, but some people like it, so whatever.
Some people like it.
Yeah. Yeah. This has been a fascinating week. I think there's certain things that everyone's experiences are going to be different. Like, I think the first time you drive a Tesla Model S, because we talked about that in recent weeks, I think a lot of people that have been around EVs, and I'm not being sniffy to someone that literally found an EV today, and everyone's welcome, by the way, and it's a big tent. I'm not being elitist, but I think if you've been around EVs for a period of time, the first time you drove a Model S, I think, was a moment. I remember Elon on stage announcing battery swapping. That was a moment. I don't really remember the Model 3 launch being big for me, but it was for most people. The Roadster coming out the back of a semi was the thing. Like, wow! Like, they are doing something no one else can do, and they still haven't delivered on that vehicle. And then it feels like early 2026 is a moment, like a moment in EVs, especially that charging video Carl made this week. It just seems like we'll remember this one, I think, anyway.
The charging experience for me was Model S launched, BYD made them work, like in terms of the fast charging.
Mm.
Like, those are two huge electric car moments. And that's what I said in the video, too. I mean, like, this is world changing because it's not about the peak charging power. It's about the democratization of fast charging being across their entire model range.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because that's the point no one's really made, actually. Everyone's gone for the big number, but no one's made that point. So Wow.
Just speaking of Model S really quickly, I think you mentioned this on socials too, Kyle. Jason Camisa for Hagerty, I believe, put out a nice video this week about celebrating the Tesla Model S as like one of the most important cars ever, basically. And, you know, if you're into that, interested in that, check it out. This is like a still shot from that video. We can't really play it because of copyright issues, but there you
Amazing
go.
Video. Everyone should watch it.
Yeah, and I'm pleased Tesla have celebrated it, because when tech companies always, they're always moving forward. And I like nostalgia. I like taking a breath to go, let's celebrate what we did. Tech companies don't always do that, like the Googles and Metas of the world. I'm really pleased Tesla's done this. So,
if anyone finds a good Model S signature for sale, one of the early ones, let me know. I'd like a Sig Red car.
Oh, I think
it's a collector's item.
What's her name has one. It's signed by Elon too, under the hood. Leilani Munter, she's selling her Tesla Model S on Cars and Bids. I think it was like around $10,000. I think it's a signature series.
It needs to be Sig Red for sure. And
I think it's red.
In the market. Found one in Texas. I'm not sure when, but we got to have one. You know, one of the early cars. I've got one of the new Model S's. So it would be cool to have the bookends.
Yeah, really.
I
would.
Remember the first time I sat in one, it was like Laguna Seca. I was there for an EV event or whatever. They had just come out not long ago, and you know, just sitting in them was like such a thrill. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that car was so many cars today still reference the design and the UI and the way that car is laid out. It influenced an entire generation of vehicles. It's not to be understated how influential that car is.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we wouldn't be talking about the stuff we are today if it hadn't been for that. And I think that's probably where we'll draw a line on the pod this week. Thank you for watching. Yeah. Thank you for listening. Tom will be back next week. We don't know who will be on the podcast next week. We've got our own things going on, but hopefully we'll all be here.
We may have a midweek episode coming up this week as well. If you haven't had enough talk about China and what's happening there, I believe we will have an episode for you in a few days.
Maybe just a comment on that stuff. I think a lot of people might get bored or at least overwhelmed by the China coverage. But it's hard. This is the best way to describe it. You know, like people who live, and I don't know what they go through, and this is maybe a derogatory assimilation. But you know, people who live in North Korea, they like eat rice and ride the subway. At least that's the story we're fed. But like, that's all they know. That's how it feels like to own and drive cars in America right now. When you exit and go to China, you're like, what is going on? And so there's a big shock right now. This is not my first time over in China, but it was my first time at a Chinese auto show. So you're just hammered with all this stuff at once. And that's why you hear us talking about it on the show. That's why you hear other creators who were over there as well talking about it. It feels like, you know, like you're entering this whole new paradigm for the first time. So anyway, it's we'll probably resume back to normal coverage once the excitement wears off. But we are for sure living on a different planet over here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll get back to hard, regularly scheduled programming soon. Before we go to, I wanted to mention that you also, this when you were there, you did so much in 2 days. I don't know how you actually did all that, but I assume you didn't sleep at all. But you also drove the Xpeng Xiaopeng, was it P7 Plus? The next
P7 just Plus P7. Or whatever? The P7 Plus is actually the P7 Minus. That's the worst one. The normal P7 is the one you want.
Man, they get to sort of their naming conventions. Yes. So that's really crazy. But the car itself is just, I love the way it looks so much. And you tried the ADAS. This was like another ADAS ride. You tried, I don't know how many ADAS systems you tried out over there.
I did three this trip. I did FSD. So I drove Model Y L. I didn't even talk about it.
Right.
I drove Model Y L, Xpeng P7 with VLA. I drove Neo ET9. Firefly, which we haven't talked about yet, the Volkswagen thing. We filmed at least 12 videos while we were over there in 2.5 days and just hammered out as much as we could. And it was the perfect amount of time. I didn't feel like we missed anything. I was in and out in no time, and it was great. That was an awesome trip.
Right on.
Wow. All right, look out for those videos when they get posted. Yeah, and we'll resume. We'll resume. Check out Midweek Show, and as always, here on the main podcast. Best place to leave a comment or a question or anything like that is in the comment section of YouTube. If you're listening in your ears when you're at the gym or taking the dog for a walk, YouTube is still the best place to keep all the comments in one place. So drop by there. Let us know what's on your mind after watching and listening to this. Give us a thumbs up. It helps YouTube tell other people like you, like us, that they might like this video. And thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you all again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Mega. Hey, super.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.